Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fralin, and I'm here with the one and only Liza Johnson. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, she has directed the new movie Elvis and Nixon. This is a true story. Explain the actual, what went down in the true event.
Well, it is kind of one of the more surreal chapters of American history. And, a lot of people have seen the photograph of Elvis and Nixon in the Oval Office. So I don't think I'm really spoiling anything to say that, it's a story about Elvis's desire to go meet Nixon. And there's some obstacles that get in his way. Notably, that Nixon doesn't understand why he should meet a rock star. and so it's also a bit of a bromance. It's a story of Elvis's journey with his friend Jerry Schilling, who is a consultant on the movie and who's become a good friend of mine. And so it's also, a bit of an intimate story about his friendship with Jerry. But then it's also powerfully about his desire to meet Nixon and to have Nixon give him a badge. Which I don't think I'm giving anything away because a lot of people have seen that photograph, he does achieve.
So. Right. Well, you said something really interesting that Nixon wasn't sure why to meet a rock star, but this is like December 1970. This isn't like early Elvis. He was very famous and established at this point. So why was it that Nixon was hesitant?
Well, in a way, one of the things that charmed me about the Nixon of this story, and I will say that I don't think every possible version of Nixon is especially charming. In the script, he just seems very committed to the project of governing, and it seems to be like a distraction to him that he would meet, why would he spend time with an entertainer? And I found that to be somewhat credible just because of things that we know about Nixon not always being super media savvy, it was one of the most interesting things about the story just because in the present, the relationship between entertainment culture and political culture has become so profoundly imbricated,
The lines are very blurred, especially this year.
Yeah, real blurred. And I think to me it was just interesting and it felt very historical to think about this time when it could have, for whatever reason, not been obvious to him why he should meet the king.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Maybe it's one of those things that looking nowadays, you almost take for granted since it's become blurred so much. But back then, yeah, they were very much sort of separate. You're right. Now, you have two really big heavy hitters playing the two roles. So playing Elvis is Oscar nominee Michael Shannon. I believe he was nominated for Revolutionary Road. And then the one and only Kevin Spacey goes from playing fictional President Frank Underwood to a real President Nixon. How did you convince both of them to come on board? And, tell me about what it was like working with both of them.
Oh, it was really a big life experience for me. And Michael Shannon was attached to the project when it was presented to me. So in a way, I don't know if I would have, if you just took me in a vacuum and said, who should play Elvis in some movie, I probably wouldn't have thought of him. But when I read the script, I was like, oh, I get it. Because, there's these very intimate character-driven elements and a big character arc for Elvis. And it's the kind of, deep inner life performance work that we know Michael to be capable of. Paired with this kind of real comedy of situation, because it simply is absurd when the coolest person on the planet goes to meet possibly the least cool president that we've ever had. and so I knew that Michael would be able to play that range, which is very special and, tonally intriguing, I think, about the movie. And then, so then I knew that we had to find a Nixon to play against Mike. And that I'll just tell your listeners that, a lot of the film is a kind of big set piece in the Oval Office between the two of them.
Nice.
And it's these two giants, like these kind of most famous, most powerful white guys of that moment. And I felt like in order for that scene to work, it had to also feel like a kind of actorly clash of the titans. And I knew that we had to get someone who could give Michael Shannon as good as he gets, so I was pretty excited when Kevin agreed to do that. I mean, he reminded me actually yesterday that he had auditioned for Frost Nixon. He had screen tested for that.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So he had already thought about the role. you know, he didn't get it, but he had thought about it.
The preparation was already done.
Actually, he said that. And he said he got back out the screen test and looked at it, and he was able to study what he had done wrong.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, so he was interested in the character, and I think he does obviously think a lot about what it means to embody state power. You know, like, he's very knowledgeable about that, mm-hmm. not just with Frank Underwood, but with Richard III and other characters that he's played, you know? And also, he did tell me that part of what drew him to the role was the idea of playing it against Mike. And I think you can see that on the screen when you see the movie. You know, you can see how much fun they're having, and you can see, you know, what it means that they both have so much skill and so much capacity to truly, honestly react to each other in real time.
Absolutely. And it's kind of a, I mean, you think of these two meeting, and you're not, I guess you're not sure if it's a drama or comedy, but this is pretty much straightforward comedy, right? Or is it a little above?
I mean, I think that the dominant tone of the film is that it's a comedy of situation. Like, there's okay. there's not really any jokes in it.
Right.
But all of us all the time could not help but be aware of the absurdism of these two worlds coming together.
I gotcha. And you got Johnny Knoxville in there. You got Tom Hanks' son, Colin Hanks, and what, Tate Donovan playing Halderman. That you got some comic voices in the supporting cast too.
I really love the whole cast, and in my opinion they're all bringing their A game.
Well, that's what you want. I'm glad. Yeah. And is it true?
I also think, by the way, Tracy Letts is quite hilarious in the movie. He plays John Finlater from the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, and that was a big experience for me too. You know, he and Michael have worked together since the very first time Michael ever acted. Tracy Letts played Dad.
Ah, okay.
Show he ever did. And I was just saying, it was really moving for me to see them having, in a way, grown up together professionally and just, you know, worked really hard for their whole lives, and to see, you know, what it means for them to be in a community to each other was like a lovely thing. And I think part of the reason that scene is so funny is because they are very comfortable improvising together.
Awesome. Tell me about the script, because it's one of the screenwriters is someone that all of our listeners are going to know. It's Cary Elwes.
Indeed.
From Princess Bride and Men in Tights and, well, of course, some serious roles like Gloria and stuff, too. But this guy is this hilarious figure from these other movies we've seen, and now here he is penning a script. Tell me about, how did he bring it to you with Joey and Hanala Sagal, or how did you become involved with Cary?
Oh, my gosh. It's quite a story. I mean, I think the project has quite a long backstory before my involvement, and, you know, I wasn't there for all of that. So I think I would just try to summarize by saying that I have the impression that Cary and Joey and Hanala were looking at the photograph. And as they talked about it, I think they just generated so much enthusiasm that they were like, oh, this could be a screenplay. And they just never stopped writing it, you know? and I mean, one of the most surreal days of my life, I was on stage on the Oval Office set, and I looked out into the kind of where everyone's standing backstage by the monitors and stuff.
Video Village.
Exactly. At the Video Village, I saw a man I had never seen before, and everyone was lighting, and I kind of could walk off the set for a minute, and I went up to this guy, and it was actually Bud Crowe.
Oh, wow.
You know, like the actual guy from the Nixon administration who's depicted in the movie. Jerry Schilling had been on set with us, and he, you know, he knew Bud Crowe from when he set this meeting, you know, so they had stayed friends, and they had done a presentation together at the National Archive, and they just were a bit in touch with each other. And so he'd called Bud and told him what we were doing, and, you know, darned if Bud didn't just show up in New Orleans. And it was just so surreal, you know, to see the real historical Jerry Schilling there with Alex Pettifer there dressed like the spitting image of the young Jerry Schilling, you know, and then Kevin there hunching and lurching around like Richard Nixon. And then to see Bud Crowe talking to Colin Hanks, who's dressed like Bud Crowe. And when I met him, he said, you know, how'd you get the idea for this? And I was like, well, but I didn't write it. And he was like, oh, well, who wrote it? And I said, oh, well, Joey and Hanala Sagal and Cary Elwes. And, you know, Bud was a very significant figure in the Nixon administration, and he's had a big career in our government. Like, I take him to be a serious person. I had read his book about the subject. And he looked at me, And he started doing scenes from The Princess Bride.
What is it? Prepare to die. You've killed my father.
Yes. Yes. And the next day, Carrie was on set, and he did those same scenes for Carrie Elwes.
Oh, that's great.
And then shortly after that, we all went to a bar, and Johnny Knoxville lit Alex Pettifer's foot on fire with tequila. And I just thought, you know, this is the most surreal week of my life.
That is pretty inconceivable. That is great. So wait, you mentioned it was in New Orleans. You guys went and shot it down there. Was this like a tax credit thing, or is there a reason you guys went down there?
Yeah, they had, and I think still have. I'm not totally sure how it's going right now, but at the time they had extremely good financial incentives for shooting there, which has been really great. I've shot two films there actually, and because they have this very consistently, they have an incredible crew base of really talented workers, and so it's a really great place to shoot. Plus, everybody likes to be in New Orleans because it's a cool place.
Oh yeah, definitely. Just got back from there myself. I'm really interested in your rise as a filmmaker yourself, because you have a list of accolades that a lot of people would be jealous of. You've been nominated for Golden Camera at Cannes. You've been nominated for the Golden Bear for your short, and now you're directing this comedy here. So what's sort of your strategy when you read a script and it's time to sit down and make the shot list? What is Liza Johnson's theory on making the shot list?
My theory is that I should do it with the cinematographer, and that person should be bringing something to the situation, you know? And other than that, it's really project by project. I mean, there's no right way to shoot a scene in general. There's only a way to support the story that's on the page, you know? Right. So on this, I really liked working with the cinematographer, Terry Stacey, and together we developed a lighting strategy that, you know, we thought was bright enough to support the comedy, but also has enough shadow and depth in it to support the depth of character that is also there, you know. And then we tried to make a visual strategy that would support the performances and make the most sense of the story.
Gotcha. Did you have any, because you were born in Ohio, but did you have any filmmaking idols when you were, you know, coming up? Is there anyone that you really admired?
There's so many people that I admire. I mean, when I was a younger person, I didn't think about being a filmmaker. You know, like, I watched movies and TV a lot, but I didn't ever, somehow it just didn't seem like something that people could do, you know? And I don't know, there's so many people that I really have a high regard for. And a lot of those don't necessarily become visible in this project,
sure,
you know? But
sure.
Like for this project, you know, this is aspirational, but like to me, I like to think about people like Mike Nichols, you know, who made so many movies that are funny,
right,
but not at the expense of the characters who are depicted.
Exactly. Yeah, he was a genius. The late Mike Nichols. That's
interesting.
Yeah. Okay. All right, cool. And tell me a little bit more about yourself. Make yourself blush a little bit. How did you get to where you are? So you were born in Ohio, but you went to you were visual arts in Massachusetts, but then you studied film in San Diego? Is that where it was?
I studied visual arts there, and I actually worked for the first part of my adult career, if you want to call it that, as I always made moving images, but I did it more in a style that you might see like in a museum or an art gallery. Mm-hmm. And it was just very organic to me. Like, that work just sort of started to creep into being more cinematic. And at a certain point I was just like, you know, if this idea is going to get more complicated or grow, it will be a movie. And if it's going to be a movie, I'm going to need to operate in a different system, because it's just the work wasn't that different, but the kind of exhibition context and the economic underpinnings and just the kind of world of narrative cinema and kind of more fine art stuff is actually pretty separate. You know, I'm not the only person that's ever crossed across it, but they are different. You know?
Definitely. Is it true that this is that the Nixon Elvis photo is the most requested photo at the National Archives?
You know, I'm going there tonight. I'll ask them. I know that has been true. It's possible that if some super popular Vine is in their archive and it got requested a lot in the last 2 weeks or something, that, you know, but it certainly some point it has been the most popular, most requested photo.
Before we go, where can we see it? And you know, are we at limited release now, or can we watch it on? I think this is an Amazon production. Is that right?
Yeah, they are an amazing new studio actually, and they're operating very much like a traditional studio. So the films that they are producing and acquiring, this is one that they acquired, are coming out theatrically, and this one is coming out in wide release on Friday. I'm not sure what the local cinema is, but it's opening in a lot of places on Friday, and it'll have a traditional theatrical run, and then after that it'll be on TV and on Amazon Prime and stuff like that.
Awesome. Well, Liza, thanks again for taking the time. The movie's called Elvis and Nixon. It stars Kevin Spacey, Michael Shannon, script by Carrie Elwes, and the wonderful Liza Johnson on her way to becoming, hopefully, the next Mike Nichols in this. So thanks.
I love it. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks so much.